CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to CityTalk Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the independent private sector lobby group and business networking club Downtown Liverpool in business, and every Sunday we look at some of the week's big business stories, talk to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. As we wave goodbye to the Labour Party conference, I'll be looking back at Ed Miliband's big speech and asking whether he has struck a chord with his attack on bad businesses. I'll be looking forward to the Tory Party conference in Manchester, which starts today, and asking what the Chancellor should be doing to kickstart our flagging economy. In particular, do we do enough to help our exporters? And whatever your party politics, how well do you think Liverpool did out of a major organisation hosting such a huge event in our city this week? And how can we capitalise on the benefits? To discuss this and more, I'm sure, the very talented Liverpool entrepreneur, owner of Leaf on Bold Street, Natalie Haywood. Good morning, Natalie.
Good morning.
And Cushion King, Tory flag waver and a real-life exporter, a dying breed, I'm afraid, Tony Caldera. Tony, good to see you.
Thanks for the intro, Frank, and good morning to you.
And the last time I seen your gorgeous face was when I was leaving to go to Italy from Liverpool Airport, and I've got posters of you all over the shop saying, fly Liverpool. I mean, great advertising campaign, but, you know, I have to say, mate, you've got a great face for radio. What were they thinking of?
Well, that's why I'm here this morning, Frank, because the TV wouldn't have me, so I'm on the radio. But, no, it's great news from KLM this week on actually confirming the link from Liverpool to Schiphol because, of course, although I would say this would now with my boat race blazoned all over John Lennon Airport, but it actually gives Liverpool a link to the world because from Schiphol you can fly just about anywhere. So it really puts Liverpool on the global business map. And there was a little bit of doubt as to whether KLM would actually continue with the link, but the fact that they have done is great news for the city.
And, you know, do you think that link is sustainable? Because we've seen other services not be as successful from Liverpool. The London one is the one that comes to mind immediately. New York was tried as well. I think that had more to do with the operator than it did the airport, to be fair. But do you think this one looks as though it can be sustainable?
I think this is a different kettle of fish, Frank. I mean, every time we've come back from China, the team and I, or from America or from wherever in the world we're doing business, and we've used the link from Liverpool to Schiphol, it's nearly always full. And two out of the last four times, we've even had our dirt cout on there as well. So even the footballers are using it. So it's great stuff. And, you know, if people are looking to come to Liverpool, what it does is it actually gives the city a focal point. Anybody can come from almost anywhere in the world, come and fly directly into Liverpool. And that can only be good news for the region's economy.
I mean, when we focus on Liverpool and its tourist industry and it's, you know, the fact that it's a visitor destination now, we often hone in on the city centre, and naturally enough we will do that. I wonder whether we make enough of the great strides that the airport has taken over the past decade or so. It probably is overshadowed somewhat in the region, isn't it, by Manchester Airport, which is international. But if you go to some of the regional airports abroad, I mean, Liverpool leaves them standing, doesn't it? I mean, Natalie, you know, Liverpool Airport,
really?
You must have seen a huge improvement.
Massive improvements. And I'd say now, I think maybe I fly, you know, maybe 10 times a year. I'd say 70% of those flights I go from Liverpool now.
Mm. And it's great, isn't it? It's so easy to on and off and, you know, none of the hassle that you get at other airports.
Quite small, but still modern, you know, got some of our, a good couple of Liverpool brands in there for shopping-wise and things. I think it's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think a European city destination like Amsterdam, I think the demand will always be there.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a quick flight and there's so much culture over there. And then likewise, them coming back here, you know.
And if you're only going on a two-hour flight, the last thing you want is 5 hours in the airport, isn't it? You know, in terms of the security and all that sort of thing. Whereas in Liverpool, it's, you know, you get there an hour and a half and it's usually fine.
Yeah, it's really convenient. I mean, you can turn up to, you know, an hour beforehand and you walk through. There's not huge queues, especially now the summer season's gone. It's ideal.
Yeah.
And of course, whereas you mentioned the link to New York, where it was a sort of one destination a service that Fly Globespan unfortunately failed to deliver in the long term. With the KLM link to Amsterdam, you literally can go absolutely anywhere. Yep. So you can fly the world from Liverpool Airport, which is what the advertising campaign was all about.
OK, well, Ed Miliband was talking in his speech on Tuesday about good businesses and bad businesses. I'm sure we'd all consider the people who run Liverpool Airport to fall into the good business category. But just in terms of his overall performance, I mean, I would say at the outset, the fact is that in the existing environment, everybody should want the Labour Party, the Tory Party, the Lib Dems to have strong political leadership. And I think there were an awful lot of people, whatever their party politics, willing Ed Miliband to sell himself a little bit better than has perhaps been the case in the past when he stood up over at the ACC there on Tuesday afternoon. Before I get into the remarks he made about business, what do you make of his performance generally, Tony, and also his performance at the conference? We obviously have this coloured by the fact that you are a Conservative, but nonetheless, how do you feel he's performing at the moment as Leader of the Opposition?
Well, generally, I was surprised when the Labour Party selected Ed Miliband as the leader of the Labour Party. I think most Conservatives expected his brother to win the election, and it was generally thought of that it was the union bloc vote that actually won him the leadership of the Labour Party, hence giving him the title Red Ed. And I think he's kind of continued that kind of theme with his probably unwise attack on lots of businesses. Of course, nobody wants to see people get rich quick and exploit other people in a kind of dishonest, disrespectful way. But ultimately, enterprise is a good thing, and it'll be enterprise that actually gets us out of this economic malaise that not only do we sort of suffer in the UK, but we're currently seeing worldwide. It's actually going to be businesses and entrepreneurs that get the country out of recession. And for Ed Miliband to actually start having a bash at business is probably unwise, and probably just shows a lack of leadership and probably a lack of vision. And unfortunately for Ed Miliband, a lack of understanding about what actually business is all about.
As a small business owner, Natalie, did you feel as though Ed Miliband was striking a chord with you when he was talking about, you know, businesses that actually demonstrate good corporate social responsibility, that do the right thing, should be rewarded, bad businesses should be punished?
Yeah, but I don't see how in reality he would, how is that monitored? How is he going to do that? How is it tangibly going to work? I felt like it was a bit of a kick in the teeth for businesses, to be honest. Whilst I am a small business with, you know, ethics and all the rest of it, I still thought his words were cheap. He showed a gross misunderstanding of how important businesses are and getting us back on track, and probably echo everything you've said, really, to be honest. But definitely felt like it was a kick in the teeth.
Yeah, I mean, my take on the speech was that he was actually playing to the gallery rather than talking to the country. And I think that any of his advisers who in the cold light of day were reading that speech ought to have said to him, do you realise that after the speech is made, you are likely to be told that that was an anti-business speech? Because despite the fact that I think if you went into the minutiae of the content, the fact is that people don't. You know, they see the headline, they see the news clips, and they will get the edited highlights. And if he didn't understand and appreciate that that was happening or going to happen, then he demonstrated a little bit of naivety. But I pick on your point, absolutely, Natalie. How and who decides who are ethical businesses, what businesses are actually operating in a way that we think is good? And the last thing I want to see is more meddling from any government of any political colour. So I think they are in a bit of a mess. And I heard Harriet Harman being interviewed on Friday, and she was struggling to actually come up with an answer to that very question. Well, who's going to make the decision? I mean, we're going to have a business czar who sits there and says, well, you're good and you're bad. It seemed a little bit strange. It didn't seem to me as though it was thought through.
You're right, Frank, and the word is naive. Unfortunately, he's just made it clear that he doesn't understand business and how it works. Unfortunately, what the country needs now and what Britain's entrepreneurs and Merseyside's entrepreneurs need now is encouragement. They need people to turn around and say, we back you, We believe in what you're trying to do. We're going to help you. Ultimately, whatever your political colours, the best thing that any government can do for business is actually just create the conditions for businesses to grow. And by doing that, you have a stable economy. You ideally have low regulation. You ideally have relatively cheap but responsible levels of borrowing and things like that. What you want is you actually ideally want sustainable, steady demand. Some of the things that actually Gordon Brown as Chancellor would talk about, you know, prudence, stability, all the things that he used to talk about when, you know, when he was following Ken Clark's policies and he was, you know, being a relatively Tory Chancellor, are actually what business needs. This is what business needs. Business needs stability. Of course, we've got to have a balanced budget. We've got to get the budget deficit down so that we can have sustainable economic growth, not the debt-fueled growth that we've had over the last few years, not just in Britain, in fairness, but in America and in Europe and around the world as well. All of the Western countries have been guilty of perhaps, you know, relying too much on debt and on government borrowing and individual personal borrowing as well as corporate borrowing as well. What Ed Miliband needs to understand is that business needs support now, not a kick in the teeth. Business needs somebody that's going to back them, not just try and use business as a scapegoat and as a whipping boy in front of their own following, in front of a party conference. And he just didn't get it, unfortunately.
He would argue that when you look at some of the bonuses that bankers, chief executives of PLCs are rewarding themselves with over the past 12 to 18 months, when, let's face it, people in business generally, people who are working in the public sector, or indeed, you know, people who work for private sector companies are facing either pay cuts or pay freezes, a tax on the pensions, he would argue that that's who he was aiming his fire at. Now, obviously, Natalie, he wasn't able to articulate that effectively enough if people like you are sat there saying, well, I felt as though it was a kick in the teeth to me.
I think it's more that there was no positivity about, you know, ideas for growth or, you know, any promise or hope. It was just about, you know, cheap words, you know, and words don't mean anything as far as I'm concerned. It's about action, isn't it? And about coming up with good ideas and being positive and thinking about the future. And we all know that people were overpaid and there's been loads of scandals recently or whatever. But, you know, there's so many small businesses out there that are not asset strippers, are not, you know, trying to do wrong, are just trying to look out for themselves, their employees, create jobs and all the rest of it. And I just think he totally didn't get it.
Mm. I used the analogy in a blog I wrote on Friday that actually, you know, if you took the words that he was expressing on Tuesday afternoon and transferred that into politics, then actually we wouldn't be talking or trusting any of our politicians, would we? Because the expenses scandal caught up a good number of them, but we still accept that that was a minority. And I think the mistake he made was he wasn't clear enough about saying, I'm attacking the minority,
absolutely,
the tiny
absolutely
minority of businesses, but I'm on your side if you're the one of the vast majority of people out there who are struggling to continue to keep your business going, employing people and trying to grow your business.
You should have used an advisor, Frank, because that's really where he should have been coming from. Of course, nobody likes corporate fat cats, especially the ones that are rewarded for failure. Of course, it's good that that this country can actually reward success. And if, you know, if we can become some of the best, become the best place in the world to do business, not only here in Merseyside, but around in Britain, all over Britain. We actually want to reward people to be successful and attract the world's best and brightest to our shores to actually build businesses and make our companies better. Because at the end of the day, we'll all profit from that, either through better employment or through higher taxes to the government. It can only be a good thing. And unfortunately, what Ed Miliband did in his speech was he actually played to the gallery. It's something that you mentioned. You know, at the end of the day, it was the unions that put him there in the first place. He wanted to make sure that they were happy with what they heard. Yes, he had some decent points in the fact that, you know, you don't want to reward failure. You don't want to reward people who are being irresponsible or not acting sustainably in business. But ultimately, let's be positive, Ed. Come on, business needs support from government. It needs support from wherever it can get it at the moment, because times are tough, not only in Britain, but around the world. So come on, next time, you have a word with his advisor, Frank, write his speech and just tell him to actually get with the programme. You know, come on, Ed.
That's an old job. I'm not going back. But I think the general consensus is that Mr. Miliband, from a business perspective at least, probably missed the target. After the break, I want to look forward to the Tory party conference, and I want to ask my guests what George Osborne can do to perhaps give the business community a little bit of hope, a little bit of heart, and more importantly, some much-needed help. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the show. I'm joined in the studio today by Liverpool entrepreneur, owner of Leaf on Bold Street, Natalie Haywood, and the Cushion King himself. Tory flag waver, I described him earlier in the programme, and Tony Caldera. Tony, it's your lads who are in Manchester this week, and lasses, of course, talking about how they're going to start to hopefully revive what is a flagging economy. You look at any statistics, any analysis, any economic opinion coming out of the last 6 weeks, and it's all about scaling down, downturn, possible return to recession. There's crisis within the Eurozone. And, you know, if I'm trying to look at this from a business perspective, I'm saying, well, actually, do you know what we need? Again, chimes with something Natalie said earlier, I think, a little less conversation, a little more action, because we've been told about all the fantastic things that the Tories were going to do in terms of cutting red tape, in terms of encouraging enterprise and entrepreneurs. I have to say, I'm not seeing a great deal of evidence at it at the moment. So can you tell me what the government, the coalition, are actually doing for businesses at the moment?
OK, you did a great Elvis impression there, Frank. I like that. What you didn't see, listeners, is his legs wobbling underneath the desk. A little more, a little less conversation, a little more action. But actually, the first thing that we have to say is that, you know, there's a lot of economic turmoil going on in the world at the moment. You look across the English Channel at the Eurozone and you see lots of debt, lots of uncertainty, market turmoil, possible defaults. You look, you know, to the United States, and there you see, you know, a dreadful political division with, you know, Republican hardliners on one side saying you can't, you know, borrow anymore. You've got to start, you know, cutting budget spending and cutting taxes, and Barack Obama, who's obviously got a different point of view. And then you look to the Far East and you see China and India with their rampant inflation, almost double digits in most cases, and lots of issues on their own. I mean, we are living, unfortunately, in, you know, incredibly difficult times. And one thing that is lucky is that we have a government, a stable government. You know, I know David Cameron was criticised by lots of people, even within his own Conservative Party, that actually formed a coalition government. But when you look at the division in the US, at least, you know, to Nick Clegg's credit and to Vince Cable's credit, at least we have a strong and stable, you know, government that actually works in the national interest rather than in invested interests. And as well, by promising to reduce the deficit over the course of the parliament, George Osborne has actually bought time with the markets. We don't see the same kind of economic issues and the same kind of market turmoil that we see, you know, across in the Eurozone. And frankly, I think what they have done is they have restored some stability. Of course, you know, we're a long way from being out of the woods yet. We've still got plenty of issues. There are lots of external shocks that could hit the British economy. And of course, domestically, we do have plenty of issues that we need to do. We need more growth. Of course we do. Of course, at the end of the day, business needs less red tape. The government's made a start on it, but I want red tape to be cut more quickly than is currently happening. I also want to try to create some of the conditions to help entrepreneurs a little bit more quickly, but I'll be pushing the business secretary and others this week, actually starting today in Manchester, to do that. But, you know, ultimately what the Chancellor has to do, as we mentioned earlier in the show, was create the best conditions for businesses to grow. And by providing a stable economy, by providing hopefully cheap finance for half a generation, we can at least make the start. But of course, there's an awful long way to go. It's a very, very tough road ahead. As George Osborne himself says, it's going to be very patchy for the next few years. There's no silver bullet. There's no panacea. We've got a huge mountain of public debt wrapped around our neck. X. That's not going to be paid overnight. So anybody that suddenly thinks that they can turn up at a conference, wave a magic wand, and it's all going to be fine is talking nonsense. It's a hard road ahead.
I think you're right in terms of a magic bullet, but equally, I think there are things that he can implement that would actually assist and help greatly and are virtually cost neutral if he implemented them. And I think that's important because I think what we all recognise is that we've got a massive deficit that needs to be tackled. Now, again, I've had discussions on the programme previously where I've said I think that we're going too fast in terms of the deficit reduction. Outside of that, if we accept that the Chancellor is determined to stick to that particular timescale, I think national insurance contributions, we should be giving a holiday to SMEs for people who are wanting to employ more people, because I'd rather take a hit on that than on unemployment benefits. In terms of the 50% tax rate, I think it's ridiculous. I think it sends the wrong signal out. I think it sends the wrong message out to people who are looking to invest in this country and to entrepreneurs who are looking to grow. You talk about red tape, Tony. My members tell me HMRI are coming at them far more aggressively now.
That's right.
And equally, you look at employment law, and because we're in recession, people are looking more carefully at people's performance. You know, we talked earlier about the fact that we all support businesses that operate in the right way and want to be the right way. There is an imbalance at the moment in terms of employer-employee relationship, and it's all for the worker, I'm afraid, when it goes through that employment law legislation that we're currently caught up in. And then I look at exports and manufacturing. We had the terrible news this week about the cuts at BAE. We're stopping making things. We have tax breaks for people who invest in research and development. I think we should have similar tax breaks for exporters because there's a risk attached to exporting. So, you know, all of those things don't take anything off his bottom line. And I just get the impression, Natalie, I may be wrong, that whereas Tony says we've got stable government, actually what we've got is push-pull government. And we've got one side of the coalition pushing for business and the other side stopping that from happening because they're concerned about their own traditional voters.
Yeah, I think it's they're playing it too safe, you know, purely from a risk-taking entrepreneur. You know, I think there should still be some lending, very, you know, prudent lending at low costs to encourage the right kinds of business. Get HMRC off our backs, because honestly, I've never seen them more vicious in my life than they have been in the last 12 months. Definitely agree with you about the employment law and trying to swing it back in terms of the in favour of the employees as opposed to the employers as opposed to the employees. The VAT rate, I think, needs to come down. I'm not fully up to speed on what the implications for that are, but being on the front line serving customers, I definitely think it's had a massive impact on us. And that's it, really. I kind of agree with absolutely everything Frank's just said.
And I think the other thing I'd say about that, because that's an interesting one, isn't it? It's one that, you know, the parties have fallen out over to an extent because Ed Balls has come out and said it should be dropped back down to, I think he said 17.5%, actually. It was 15 at one point under the last administration. And again, depending on what figures you look at, but there is a case to suggest that actually a reduction in VAT can often get the Exchequer more money because people will spend more cash. Mm. And similarly, you know, this 50% tax rate, Tony, you know, again, we're now told that's costing the Treasury money, chasing people because people are going offshore, they're not compliant. And, you know, as I've said this time and again, there'll be people out there listening to me now thinking, what are you going on about? These people can afford 50% tax. Not whether they can afford it or not. Is it fair that somebody should have half of their income, more actually, if you take it in the whole, taken off them? And I, for the life of me, can't understand how a Conservative-led government is continuing with that policy.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, this was part of the political legacy that was left by the last Labour government, as well as leaving us with a record budget deficit. For most Conservatives, and for especially entrepreneurial Conservatives, this 50p tax rate is a nonsense. It's a completely politically motivated stunt. As you said, it's not only is it revenue neutral, but it's actually potentially even disruptive now. What a lot of people don't understand, especially the people who are interested in the politics of envy, is that global entrepreneurs and people around the world have a choice. They can decide where to invest, where to set up their businesses, and what this government needs to do is encourage that. We want, not only in Britain, but here, especially in Merseyside, we need foreign direct investment. We need people to come in from China, from America, from Europe, from all over the world, to come and invest here in the Liverpool City region and actually put their money where their mouth is. Now, if we give them good tax rates to do it. Enterprise zone is a good start, for example. That's something that the government has done to try and help that. But I agree completely. The 50p tax is a nonsense. And I do believe that as soon as George Osborne has the opportunity to do so, that he should do it at the first available opportunity. And to take on some of your other points, especially some of Natalie's points, she's right. Most businesses' main concern at the moment is availability of funding. You know, the banks still aren't lending enough. What we don't need is the crazy casino lending that we saw at the end of the boom in the last decade. What we need is responsible lending for good businesses who can show that they've both got either security and the ability to repay the business, and they've got good cash flows, good profitability, and there's still problems. I'm lucky in my business. I've just had a refinancing deal with HSBC, but I've had 20 years experience and I've got a very strong balance sheet. Companies like Natalie's business on Bold Street, you know, she's just setting out, she's just getting going. It's difficult for companies as startups and entrepreneurial businesses to actually get that because they've got nothing to back against. Yeah. And it's very difficult, and we really need to support those people. And some of you that we've had five different visits from different departments of HMRC in the last 2 months. It's bonkers, it's barmy. There must be somebody in the Treasury somewhere saying, all right, go on lads and lasses, out you go, just get as much as you can, and we need to pay off this deficit, just go and get whatever we can. And it's almost it's so aggressive. Yeah, I mean, they just won't leave our guys alone. And ironically, my financial director just says, I don't think it's really in my managing director's interest to kind of hide money from Her Majesty's government. You know, it's not really in his interest. So he has a good laugh with them every time they come. And some of your other points, again, the tribunal system is a nonsense. It's a one-way bet, unfortunately. It's a zero-sum game in favour of that.
Just on those two very, very simple points, because, again, I think this is where my frustration comes from at the moment with the government. We have no question, look, we accept that the tax people have to do the job. But equally, I'm hearing so many stories now about the aggressive approach that it's clearly happening. You know, this isn't just one or two people anecdotal stuff. This is really happening. So, you know, the Chancellor actually does have the power to say, hey, guys, let's be a bit more sensitive. Because I'll tell you what's happening. People are actually saying to me, I'm going to close my business down. I can't be dealing with all this nonsense, all this bureaucracy, all this red tape, the amount that I'm having to pay my accountants to actually get me through this. Exactly. I may as well close the business down and start again next week. So it's a nonsense. And on this thing, and in terms of employment law, absolutely right in terms of what you say there, Tony. I have got no problem at all with somebody taking a boss to a tribunal if they feel as though they've been unfairly dismissed. But at the end of that process, if that person has found that she's been or he's been fairly dismissed, then the cost should fall upon them. But it doesn't. They walk away without any cost. It's risk-free. And the business ends up with the cost of the whole tribunal and the whole the whole bureaucracy and the advice and support that they've had to pay for. You can actually go to Liverpool City Council and get representation for nothing if you're the other side of the fence. That can't be right.
It's not right, Frank. And I've been chatting personally with Chris Grayling, who's a former shadow minister for Liverpool, who's actually personally looking into this. And I actually have a meeting with him tomorrow to discuss this a little bit further, because some of the anecdotal evidence that he's been hearing from around the country backs up exactly what you're saying. The fact of the matter is for an employer at the moment, you're looking normally at least £1,500 to £2,000 guaranteed loss just because somebody brings an employment tribunal against you. You have the inconvenience of the management time. It's a distraction. At the end of the day, we're in arguably the most difficult economic circumstances that any of us have lived through, especially young people like Natalie, who've obviously got time on their side, unlike the old codgers like me and you, Frank. But basically, it's very, very difficult. What we actually need is support, and we need this system, this unfair, ridiculous system, to be sorted out, and the quicker it's sorted out, the better. Mm. And believe me, and listeners who are out there, I'm sure that people like Frank, who've got their own business group, and they can lobby on behalf of businesses, and people like myself, who've got the ear of several ministers, we will be badgering them morning, noon and night to try and sort this out, because this is fundamentally unfair and we've got to sort it out as soon as possible.
And with recession comes the vexatious claims culture that we've seen, unfortunately, introduced into our legal system, you know, where there's blame, there's a claim, all that sort of nonsense. And it's now starting to come through into this area of employment law, and I think it's something that really does need to be tackled very urgently if we're not to get ourselves in trouble. Because again, only this week I've learned of a business that's decided to close the doors because of such a claim. It's going to cost them about £5,000, and the guy said, you know what, this is nonsense, I'm walking away from it. You know, the person just simply wasn't good enough for the job, and yet it's going to cost me £5,000 to prove that's the case.
Oh, yeah.
I'm closing my doors and walking away. I'm going to come back to this after the break, but also lighten the mood a little and look at what Liverpool is doing to attract great visitor numbers and to maximise the promotion and marketing of our city on the back of what has been the Labour Party conference this week. Stay with us.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the final part of the programme. I'm joined in the studio this week by the Cushing King himself, Tony Caldera, and the very talented Liverpool entrepreneur, owner of Leaf on Bold Street, Natalie Haywood. We've been a little bit heavy in our content this morning, talking about economics, governments, oppositions. We've got to lighten the mood a little bit because we've had a fabulous week in Liverpool this week. Ian Dale aside, a Conservative blogger, I believe, Tony, who described Liverpool as being about as welcoming as Gaza. But outside of that ridiculous comment from that Wally, we've had a fabulous week as a city, haven't we? And most people have gone away with a spring in the step. We even delivered great weather for them.
You see, you even get the weather in Liverpool, and that's the message to any Conservatives on the way to Manchester now. The weather in Liverpool for the Labour Party conference was better. We've had a fantastic week. You know, of course, I'm not particularly enamoured with some of the things that Ed Miliband said, but the bottom line is the Labour Party conference in Liverpool was a stunning success. The city came out in all its glory to support it. The welcome as ever in Liverpool is the best of any conference venue. Having been to many conferences and political conferences around the country, Liverpool, with its outstanding arena and convention centre and its conference offer, is second to none. And believe me, I'll be badgering everybody from the Tory party chairman down this week to have a look at that. I know that we have had people from the Conservative Party at the conference this week looking at, I don't think they were spying, Frank. I think they were genuinely looking to have a look at the conference venue and the city itself, and all the reports that I've heard are that everyone's been very, very impressed indeed. And, you know, congratulations to the Arena and Convention Centre, to the city, to the Bureau, to the City Council, to everybody for pulling off what's been an exceptional event.
11,000 visitors and delegates at the conference, bars, restaurants, hotels, all jam-packed. Lots of news stories about the conference, great television pictures all over the world. It's just been a great week for Liverpool as a visitor destination, Natalie, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been absolutely amazing. I think I read some figures about this 1 week's added like 5 or 15 million pounds to our
20 million.
Was
apparently.
It 20 million? Mm-hmm. To the economy in Liverpool, and I think I felt so proud watching the news, and every news channel you turn on, it's Liverpool this, Liverpool that. The pictures are amazing. We've had quite a few people in our shop who've been impressed. There's Google in town at the same time. We've got Google in today. And Bold Street Festival. There's been so much going on. Yeah. So much happening.
So you've had visitors from the conference in getting as far as Bold Street and into your shops?
Yeah, we were in the brochure that the delegates got given. There was a where to eat kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's quite a few of Bold Street eateries featured in that.
And I want to ask about the Bold Street Festival, actually, because I think that, again, one of the big concerns whenever new developments take place is that there's going to be disconnectivity and there's going to be displacement rather than the whole city benefiting. But the Business Improvement District has really worked, hasn't it, to ensure that the independent traders up in your part of the world have managed to ensure that you've still got a great profile, that your marketing strategies are right. And the festival, as I understand it, was an absolute fabulous success.
Yeah, we the festival, we had our busiest ever day of trade during the festival. And I think it just proved that innovative, creative, low-cost ideas and animating the streets are just the way forward for everyone. And it's a win-win situation for everybody involved, you know. Public get great free entertainment, traders benefit, the city's alive. And the bid, City Centre bid and Jed helped kind of facilitate that. But also the traders did a lot of the work to promote the event and things. And it is important to carry out activity like that, just especially on our street when we compete with the Liverpool One and all the great things that go on down there, just to differentiate all the areas. You know, we very much are the creative independent street with all the, you know, all the sort of the quirky
bohemian almost,
yeah. Shop. So it's great.
It's a very creative part of our city, isn't it? And I love Bold Street. I love going up to Bold Street and having a look around. And again, outside of Liverpool One now, you know, the work that's been done to actually regenerate the whole of the city centre. And it was great this week because you're walking around the city and, you know, all the things that they've done with the plazas and they've, it does feel like a European city now in the truest sense of the word. Mm-hmm. You've got people sat out in, you know, on these fabulous benches that have been put out now. You know, it just feels and looks so different, doesn't it?
I think it's one of the good things that's come out of the recession, because I think people are really pulling together and people at parties that wouldn't normally speak, competitors are talking and trying to collaborate on new ideas. And I feel like the last 12 months I've really kind of fallen in love with it again. And there's a real passion and a sense of community out there on the streets at the moment with traders and the city centre.
And I think, you know, again, I don't think we can repeat this often enough. You mentioned it, Tony, the ACC Arena, that conference and the convention centre that will be as well in terms of the exhibition centre that's being developed down there. It just adds so much value to what we've got to offer.
It's an incredible asset for the city, especially by 2015 when they'll have the exhibition centre, hopefully an extra, you know, 4 or 5 star hotel as well. And as
you've already got bookings for that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, well, I'm hoping that one of the bookings will be, because although Ian Dale might not like Liverpool so much, I can assure you that David Cameron does, and he'd be very keen to bring the...
What was that all about?
Oh, he's just looking for some PR. He just wants to get himself in the press for this week for the Tory Party conference. They just wants to be on everybody's lips. It's a cheap publicity stunt, which unfortunately, you know, the Conservative Party's clearly distanced itself from. And now, you know, just I'm not even going to give him any more free publicity, to be frank, because he was out of order.
Give him our love if you see him.
Because he's not made my life easy the last few days. Anyway, I've been on the defensive, trying to put him in the gutter where he belongs. But anyway, I'll do that in Manchester. But, you know, jokes aside, you know, the arena and the convention centre, and as Natalie mentioned, the value added it brings to the city. You know, again, it's got its act together. It's working with the traders and the bars and the hotels and the you know, the businesses within the city to make sure that the visitors don't just stop at the arena and stop at the Albert Dock, but they actually, you know, they get to Bold Street. This is a classic example, and that's because of the work that, you know, good entrepreneurs like Natalie and some of the traders on Bold Street, working with the arena and convention team, actually getting people together and working together. And it's a fantastic asset for the city, and I think something that we should all be really proud of. Although it hurt the fact that it was a Labour Party conference, I was really proud of what the city did this week, and well done to everybody.
Yeah, and you know, party politics aside, the fact is that of those 11,000 people that are here, you know, there's a significant number of them who've got no party politics, the journalists, the people who are coming for all sorts
come again,
of different
Frank. They'll
lobbyists,
all come again. They enjoyed it and they'll come back again. And they don't only spend the money once, but they spend the money again and again and again.
And I'll tell you the other thing that I think we've started to take for granted somewhat, and it only hit home how fortunate we are again this week, the number of great hotels we've got in the city now. Because, again, it wasn't that long ago when your choice was basically the Adelphi or the Crown Plaza.
And that's what Ian Dale was talking about. He needs to move on. He needs to get with a programme Ed Miliband, doesn't he?
He obviously hasn't. And, you know, you look at... I was in Indigo with the Marco Pierre White restaurant the other day, and that was packed because the conference is in town. Went over to the Hilton as well one day this week. That was absolutely heaving. The Crown, obviously, where that is as well now, and all the activity there. Malmaison have just had a bit of a relaunch because they've had some problems with the exterior. That building's now sorted. And, you know, everybody has said to me who was at the conference, firstly, how fantastic the facilities are, but secondly, how great the service in Liverpool is. Because, again, I think we've actually started to take service industry a bit more seriously than was the case in the past. And, you know, as a retailer, that's paramount for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Liverpool's always had friendly service, but sometimes a little bit unprofessional. But I think people are really, really upping their game, certainly in the bar and restaurant industry. I've noticed a lot of people joining me that want to do it as a career as opposed to just a stopgap and things like that. You know, it's becoming, now the job market is shrinking, it's becoming a viable option for people to work in the industry long term and actually, you know, do a really, really, really good job, professional, a really professional job. So I think the service has definitely improved, but we're friendly, aren't we? Chatty, friendly, smiley.
Well, there was that recent survey that said we're the friendliest city in the world, didn't it? Which was lovely. But can I just stick on this point of professional service? How easy are you finding it to recruit staff who are actually able to provide that?
We get absolutely inundated with people that are, quite frankly, far too good for the job. I think when we put an advert out for a part-time member of staff, we get like 500 CVs in. It's insane at the moment. So at the moment, it's good for us in as much as we've got the pick of the crop kind of thing. But we're finding that a lot of staff are staying with us when, you know, they might have gone and done other things. At the moment, in that sense, I think it's really, you know, it's a good thing for employers in as much as the talent out there is fantastic.
And if we accept that as an area of growth, certainly the service sector is one where Liverpool can tick a box, just want to go back to a little bit of an early conversation that we're having around manufacturing. Mentioned the BAE job losses and exporting. And again, Tony, you know, you're in that industry sector. You know how tough it is out there in terms of the climate, both in terms of the cost that you're facing, in terms of the ability to borrow and all the rest of it. Do you think Liverpool can almost forget about manufacturing for the next decade or so? Or do you think we've got to be a little bit more positive than that and see if we can find the innovators, the people who invent things, people like yourself, who are still looking to trade across the world, because this city was built on world trade.
The city was built on world trade, and we've got to look for that. We can't just accept and wave the white flag and say we can't manufacture and export anymore. That's, you know, that's just, it's a non-starter. We can't do that. You know, this city and this region has a proud trading history, not only from Victorian times, but, you know, recently there are some good businesses, some good manufacturing businesses, not only good businesses, you know, that we talked about on Bold Street and the arena, the big business, but there are manufacturing companies around the region. Again, there's another one, for example, a company called RS Clare, who've also done a lot of exporting and are going to New York with us on the, you know, HSBC thing. There are lots of good manufacturing businesses, and we've got to do the best we can to try and encourage it. Before, everyone used to kind of dismiss manufacturing, say, oh yeah, it's just cheap jobs, it's no good. We've got to try and, you know, make exporting and make manufacturing a desirable career again. People are kind of saying, oh well, I want to be in the leisure industry, I want to be in retail. Well, actually, there's nothing wrong with being a manufacturer. People used to laugh at me when they say, oh yeah, what do you do for a living? Yeah, I make cushions. I mean, they're not laughing now, obviously, but they were laughing back in the day. And it's sad that people actually still think about manufacturing in that respect, because ultimately the city was built on exports. You look down the waterfront and, you know, OK, some of it's been regenerated recently, but, you know, some of the better buildings that we've got on our city skyline were built from the traders who actually manufactured goods and exported them around the world and imported them as well. At the end of the day, you know, the port and that kind of section of the economy is something that we've really got to continue to build on. And the more we can do that, and the more manufacturers and exporters we can have in this region, the better. We can't give up on it, Frank.
And I would totally echo those sentiments. I think you're absolutely right. But the other thing we often talk about on this programme is people's perceptions of Liverpool as a city. But what I want to ask you about is people's perceptions internationally of the UK at the moment.
It's funny, actually, because I have spent quite a bit of time travelling recently on business in Europe and in China and in the US. And in China, a lot was made of the riots. Of course, the Chinese government wanting to say, OK, yeah, well, the UK is not that cool. You're all walking around with the UK flag all over your jeans and your T-shirts and everything, but actually it's a mess. The Chinese aren't having it. They think the UK is great. They all think that Liverpool Football Club's amazing and that, you know, the UK...
get everything right.
That's right. Well, you know how it is, Frank. I asked them about Everton and they... but and in New York as well, it's funny because the Americans have got a lot of problems of their own, so they've got to sort things out. But generally, people are realising that we're all in the same boat and the UK is still a good place to do business. But hopefully we can make that even better.
And I think Liverpool has got a place of pride within the UK now, Natalie, particularly on the back of some of the things that we've seen this week.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the new marketing campaign is really kind of like emotional, goosebumpy stuff, you know, really gets to you, doesn't it? And, you know, I feel quite proud about that. I was actually involved in it, that's not why, but...
it's Liverpool, I'm Liverpool.
Yeah,
all the work of Natalie Hayward.
I was one of the mugshots, but
don't knock yourself. You're a credit to the kitchen. I'm not being patronising, but we need more Natalies. Please don't take that the wrong way. We desperately do. We should be really proud of what you've done.
Well, listen, that's I'm afraid all we've got time for from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business for another Sunday. Thanks to my guests, Tony and Natalie. Thanks to my producer, Jonathan Dean, and most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week. And don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.